For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, January 14th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
All right, Jacob, this is going to be a relatively short episode. You and I are actually preparing to record a much longer episode for later this week, which is our big 50 best movie moments of 2024 episode. I'm really excited about that. We're going to try to spread that over the course of the next few days so listeners can look forward to that. In the meantime, though, I just wanted to run through some news items that happened since essentially the middle of December, which is the last time we did a proper news episode on this show. I wanted to mention at the top of the show the Justin Baldoni, Blake Lively, It Ends With Us lawsuit back and forth stuff going on there. You can read about that at Slash Film. We wrote about it at the time. There's a whole separate thing where like Marvel fans think that Ryan Reynolds' character of Nice Pool in Deadpool and Wolverine is basically like a veiled dunking on the Justin Baldoni persona. He's the guy who directed It Ends With Us. That whole situation is like really ugly and messy. And like,
yeah, at the Baldoni has even spoke up and said that the Marvel thing is true, which is an incredible self-own, not to get too deep into it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that whole situation just seems like at the very least wildly unprofessional. So that's all I'm going to say about that. You can dig into it. There's like lawsuits and countersuits and all sorts of nonsense going on there. But
I look forward to the book about it in like 2 years. I think that's when you properly discuss this, because right now it's just so much noise and dramatic, interesting noise. But I'm not comfortable enough to speak about it until somebody much smarter than me writes that book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so I did want to ask you about the final Spider-Verse movie, which I think is going to be called Beyond the Spider-Verse. This movie now has two directors instead of the three directors sort of triumvirate that the first two films in this trilogy were operating with. So Bob Persichetti and Justin K. Thompson are going to be directing this next movie whenever it comes out. You know, there was a lot of hay made about a delay, and like this movie was supposed to be out already, and there's, you know, a whole rash of drama behind the scenes in terms of like stuff that's affecting a lot of folks in the animation community in terms of like being squeezed and not really having enough time to deliver the things that they need. And again, you can read about all that stuff at Slash Film, but just in terms of the news component of it, recently it came out that Beyond the Spider-Verse is going to be directed by these two guys, who one of them I believe served as like a production designer, Justin K. Thompson, on the first movie, and then co-directed the previous film. And then Bob Persichetti was one of the original directors of the first movie, Into the Spider-Verse. Rafael Motamayor, who writes about animation a lot at Slash Film, had a little bit of a negative read on this. And I thought that was interesting. He was basically like, I'm a little worried that they're going from three directors to two, because this means that these two guys are now going to have to shoulder the workload of three people. And they also have essentially only directed stuff in this Spider-Verse milieu or whatever, so they don't really have a ton of directing experience outside of that. I was wondering if you shared Raphael's hesitation, or if this is, you know, good news to you, or how did you react to seeing that these guys were announced to be the directors of Beyond the Spider-Verse?
Raphael is really tapping the animation scene, and I think his concerns are warranted, because animation, like video game development right now, is really being defined by crunch, where animators and video game developers essentially being asked to work, you know, 12-hour days, 7 days a week for months on end, and in an industry where they're not getting paid enough and where the threat of layoffs is omnipresent. So skepticism and, you know, is, I think, not an unfair way to look at any news like this. That said, the fact that these are veterans of the series and the fact that these movies have always been kind of guided for, you know, by the hands of Chris Miller and Phil Lord makes me think that they're probably, in terms of the actual final movie, won't be that different from what our expectations are or from the previous films. I am curious because I know that Lord and Miller, you know, is as creative geniuses as they are very much guys who work as iteration filmmakers and writers. They really sort of rework until something is perfect, which is easier in live action than it is in animation, where sometimes that will mean like months of work, you know, being thrown away. And that's, like I said, I'm not prepared to like throw anyone under the bus here. I'm not prepared to be negative. But I do think that considering the current state of this particular corner of the industry, some skepticism is warranted, but I am hoping for the best. And I am going to, right now, until I hear otherwise, assume that things are going okay and all the delays and changes are for the betterment of the film, because I love these films too much to lead with negativity without the proper knowledge.
Yes, I'm right there with you, 100% aligned on that. I wonder if we are aligned on the Superman trailer. James Gunn's Superman trailer came out. This was, I mean, before Christmas, December 19th or something like that, I think, was when this trailer dropped. But we haven't had an opportunity to really get around to talking about this. I'm sure everyone has already, you know, formulated their opinion and seen all the takes and all that kind of stuff. But Jacob, I don't think you and I have really had a chance to talk about this even like internally on our Slash Film Slack or anything. So what did you make of the trailer for James Gunn's newest movie?
I wasn't overwhelmed by it, but I like what I'm seeing. I think James Gunn is a legitimately interesting filmmaker, and his Guardians of the Galaxy films are, frankly, some of the most nuanced and interesting things come out of Marvel, straight up. I think that Guardians 2 is my favorite MCU movie, somehow. It is. I say that, people get mad at me when I say it, but it's true. I think that movie is very much about things that he feels strongly about. And so is the third one, which is a really dark, tough watch and for a series that, you know, is based on, you know, those characters. And Superman, I know he's been saying all the right things in the press about leaning on Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's All-Star Superman, one of the best runs of all time, for inspiration. So I'm in the tank for this. I'm ready for it. That said, the trailer itself is a very good trailer. I don't think it's a great trailer. I think it's a good one. But I showed it to my wife, whose main experience with DC characters, you know, in the past 10 years has been all the Zack Snyder adjacent stuff. And her first reaction was, oh, well, that does not look dark and grim and depressing. And she's right. This has a cute super dog. It has, images that are, you know, reliant on hope. And it has Nicholas Holt with a shaved head. I'm ready for a great Lex Luthor, because I don't think there has been a great live-action Lex Luthor yet. So I am very much confident that James Gunn will deliver here. And I'm very, very curious about what this will look like, you know, in action. Because I don't think that Zack Snyder made movies that were visually brilliant. That first Man of Steel trailer is just still one of the great pieces of media, because when you break that movie down to its visuals, Man of Steel looks incredible, but it's a narrative mess. James Gunn does not have the visual panache of a Zack Snyder, but he's always had an ear for dialogue, an ear for character, and like a giant big heart about his movies being about things. So I don't want to judge Superman by this trailer, because I think that the true magic of Gunn as a filmmaker is in the nuance of his characters and their dynamics and how they learn and grow in their stories. So yeah, trailer looks good, but I don't think it can. I don't think it's capable of displaying why I like James Gunn movies. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I really like David Corenswet and Rachel Brosnahan, just in terms of like the aesthetic, the look, the vibe, you know, all that kind of stuff. I think the overall look of this movie, I think I heard some complaints, and I think Chris even complained a little bit about some of the, maybe like a desaturated kind of look or something. I don't remember what term he actually used. I don't think it was desaturated, but there's some sort of issue that he had with like the teaser for this trailer. But I think, I don't know, personally, I think the trailer actually looks kind of great. The colors seem to really pop, and there's like a tactility with the costumes, which is like a weird thing for me to hone in on in, you know, after 25 years of superhero, like of Hollywood, of superhero movies dominating Hollywood. But there's just something about the way that Gunn has shot this that it really makes me feel like I know what these costumes feel like. I know what the cape feels like. I'm sure it's even digital. You know, they do a ton with superhero stuff. Just make the cape fully digital because it's like wildly impractical to have an actor walking around with a cape and it doesn't ever blow in the wind just the right way or whatever. But there's something about the way that he shot this that really just makes it feel gritty in a different way than like the sort of beleaguered tone that you normally associate that word with when you're talking about superhero stuff. So I'm kind of like cautiously optimistic and very much like aligned with your thoughts on James Gunn as like a thematically interesting guy who's interested in telling stories that mean something. So hopefully this movie ends up being great, because I think it could be, especially with the way 2025 has already started and what is sure to come politically and otherwise in this year, it would be really, really nice to have Superman to look forward to as a true bright spot on the movie release calendar this summer. So I'm really hoping that that's like an unfair burden to put on any movie, but I'm hoping that it's able to live up to that. So speaking of DC, I wanted to get your thoughts about Jason Momoa joining the DC universe as the Lobo character, who is this sort of rock and roll biker figure who has appeared in DC media for a long time, DC Comics for a long time. And I think he was originally envisioned as some sort of like over the top riff on like a Punisher type of character. And like so many of these characters that popped up in the 90s, sort of took on a life of his own and like was maybe beloved for some of the wrong reasons, but is kind of like spun off into this whole other identity. And I'm sure you have like some sort of relationship to the Lobo character. And what do you think about former Aquaman actor Jason Momoa playing a different character now in this newly launched DC universe?
I'm not a Lobo expert. I know the very basics. As you said, he's this sort of extraterrestrial bounty hunter, biker, hard drinking, always a cigar in his mouth, party guy. And it's funny because this is the exact kind of character that matches the Jason Momoa persona. I mean, Aquaman was such a giant left turn for Aquaman. Like, Jason Momoa's Aquaman is a complete reinvention of that character, whereas Jason Momoa like doesn't need to make any changes to his on-screen persona any way whatsoever to play Lobo. This is a character that like is written to his strengths already for the past 30, 40 years. So I'm not going to pretend to be a like Lobo expert, but he is very silly. He's very ridiculous. And I do think that I've enjoyed him best when he has been written for comedy. It reminds me a lot of actually Deadpool, who was a character who was originally written and created as like a serious action anti-hero, who then other writers slowly started working in the humor and the meta stuff that defined him. I think Lobo is a bit similar to that, and I feel like he sort of evolved to be funnier as time has gone on. So this is such a strong fit for Momoa that it's hard for me to be like remotely mad at it. It's to me, if there's any sort of like real nail in the coffin for the previous DC universe, it's this. Like the fact that they're recycling Momoa this quickly is very funny to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about the introduction of this character into the DC universe is that Lobo is apparently going to appear in Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, which is a movie that Craig Gillespie is working on. It has Millie Alcock, who was in the first season of House of the Dragon, as Supergirl. And I guess it was based on, this movie is going to be based on a Tom King version of that story, like an acclaimed run of that that comic story. And we have an article up about this, and I'll just provide the very basics, but he originally pitched his arc on that story as being a Lobo Supergirl essentially riff on True Grit, where Lobo would be like the Rooster Cogburn character and Supergirl would be like the Maddie Ross character. And that ultimately got sort of nixed or switched up in the development process of the comic book run, where Supergirl became the Rooster Cogburn sort of older grizzled version of that character and or sort of a stand-in for that archetype or whatever. And so now they're like going back and apparently making this movie as kind of like a live action version of King's original pitch of what he wanted the comic to be. So That's a unique pairing that I wouldn't really have expected. I've not read the Tom King comic on which this is based, but
it's
Lobo
really
and
good, it's exceptionally good.
Okay, so what do you think about this Lobo and Supergirl going around the galaxy or doing whatever they're going to be doing? Like, what do you think about that pairing and that as like a portal for Momoa's introduction into this new universe?
It sounds like a good time to me. I mean, it definitely, you know, clearly they're using the comic as more of a springboard than a, you know, a full-on adaptation. But I'm very intrigued by this. I'm very interested to see what comes of it. If they can capture the spirit of that comic, the reason why, it's such a smart take on Supergirl. It really, like, I've never been a Supergirl fan in the sense that I don't understand why she exists when Superman does, other than that we just need a new character, you know, to put in the Superman family. And Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow really established, oh, here's a very good reason for her to exist and to be completely different than Clark Kent and to, like, truly stand on her own as a character with her own motivations and goals and interior world. So that to me is more so than a Lobo team up. That's what I'm excited to see in this movie, fingers crossed. But at the same time, you know, if a buddy adventure starring Supergirl and Lobo, you know, yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and get into a few more news items.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
All right, Jacob, Christopher Nolan's next movie was announced. And again, this happened in like the end of December. So it's already gone through a ton of cycles of takes and all that kind of stuff. But once again, you and I have not really talked about this. Christopher Nolan is apparently making a version of The Odyssey that is going to be coming out in 2026. This is the film that has Matt Damon, Tom Holland, Zendaya, Robert Pattinson, Lupita Nyong'o, Anne Hathaway, and Charlize Theron lined up to star. And we don't really know if it's going to be a like old school version of like a period piece, for lack of a better term, of like the Greek epic, or if it's going to be updated to the modern day and kind of like a more of a modern riff, maybe similar to something like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, what the Coen brothers did in that movie. So what was your reaction when you saw this for the first time? And because this was like, there were rumors about what Nolan's next movie was going to be, but none of them were an adaptation of The Odyssey. So this kind of came out of nowhere when Universal confirmed that this is what the project was. So what was your take on that?
I'm very excited about this. I mean, not to dwell on something that makes me absolutely crazy, but the number of like stories of like people not knowing what The Odyssey was when this was announced, was like a dagger in my gut, because I studied The Odyssey in friggin' high school, and I read it since then, and it's great, and it's cool, and it's, strip aside, you know, the antiquated language, you know, you have to sort of meet halfway to understand what's going on. It is just an incredible adventure story. The Odyssey is a blast. It's so weird and funny, and has every genre wrapped up into it. It's full of horror and action and romance and mystery. It is... Now, I'm going to go ahead and safely assume that Matt Damon is a choice for Odysseus here, the lead who finds himself lost, you know, traveling from island to island, if you go by traditional version, trying to get home. while the gods literally plot against him, setting him up against all kinds of monsters and chaos. And I don't know, the idea of Matt Damon at his age playing essentially a riff on his Martian character at sea in ancient Greece is sounds like a hoot to me, Ben. I'm really hoping this is as traditional as it gets. I want monsters. I want Greek myth. I want Robert Pattinson doing mocap Polyphemus, you know, the giant Cyclops. That's what I want out of this, Ben.
Yeah, man, that would be really awesome. I also hope that it's like just a straight up traditional movie and doesn't necessarily get into like the modern day version, just because we've seen that with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, like relatively recently. And I think a filmmaker with Nolan's vision and scope and budget and resources at this point in his career, coming off of a Best Picture and Best Director win with Oppenheimer, would just be able to make something on a scale that we've never really seen before, at least with this story. So I hope that that's what happens there. But obviously, we'll keep you all posted as more information about this movie comes out, because it's still like relatively mysterious right now. I think basically Universal put out a statement saying he's making the Odyssey a mythic action epic shot across the world, and he's going to be using brand new IMAX film technology to do it. But we don't even know what that means. Like, what is it? New cameras? Is it smaller cameras? Like, what? I don't know. We're probably going to learn more about that as we come along. So, all right, just a couple more news items here before we wrap up. The Mummy, which is a story that I know that you have a lot of experience with and passion for, Jacob. Blumhouse is making a new version of The Mummy, and Lee Cronin, the director of Evil Dead Rise, is going to be writing and directing this new take. And Cronin said, "This will be unlike any mummy movie you've ever laid eyeballs on before. I'm digging deep into the earth to raise something very ancient and very frightening." So obviously we saw Universal try to launch the Dark Universe with a mummy movie starring Tom Cruise back in 2017, but they're going back to the well here, so to speak. And what's your take on this, and what do you think about Lee Cronin as a fit for the writer director of this project?
Yeah, I think Lee Cronin's a really cool filmmaker. I think Evil Dead Rise is a terrific time with the movies, shows him being able to take a smaller horror budget and do incredible things with it. And I'm going to assume that this is going to be on the scale of Lee Whannell's Wolfman and Lee Whannell's Invisible Man, these sort of smaller, straight-up horror takes on these Universal characters, as opposed to trying to blockbuster them up. Because as much as I love the 1999 Stephen Sommers Mummy, the Tom Cruise one just ain't it. And I like these characters when they're scary. I like them when they're tragic and weird. And I think that on a smaller budget, somebody like Lee Cronin can deliver something really interesting, especially when you go back and watch the original Mummy film from the 30s, the original Universal movie with Boris Karloff. It's a chamber piece. It is not a giant sprawling adventure like the Stephen Sommers film. It is about a monster who comes back from the dead and sort of puts himself into the modern world and into a circle of professionals and starts to essentially infiltrate their world to get what he wants. I'm not saying that's what Lee Cronin will be about, but I do think the idea of a very small contained mummy movie like The Invisible Man with a handful of characters where the focus is on, you know, terror over action is the right way to take these characters. It's the right way to make the Universal monsters relevant again. And I think that Cronin is such a smart choice for, if you want to tell me, hey, this movie's gonna be scary and unpredictable, Cronin's the right choice, and I'm really hoping that they let him do his thing.
Cool. Well, that comes out in 2026, and I'm very curious to see what he does there. And then the last story that I wanted to talk to you about, Jacob, is that Marvel is rumored to recast Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa character ahead of Black Panther 3. And I feel like my thoughts on this have evolved over time as my interest in the Marvel Cinematic Universe has waxed and waned in recent years. But evidently an actor was offered the role of T'Challa relatively recently, according to a rumor from Jeff Snyder, who publishes scoops occasionally and things like that. And this actor reportedly turned down the part because they didn't want to jeopardize their career momentum by stepping into Boseman's gigantic shoes. But Marvel is evidently on the hunt for a new T'Challa actor. And we have an article about this at Slash Elm where we speculate that like maybe it's not necessarily replacing the Black Panther, the Chadwick Boseman version of Black Panther. Maybe it's talking about like a grown up version of his son who appears at the very, very end of Black Panther Wakanda Forever. So I guess it could technically be that. Denzel Washington is supposed to show up in Black Panther 3 whenever that decides to materialize. But what's your thought on this, Jacob? Do you think that T'Challa, who's this sort of beloved character in the world of Marvel Comics, should be replaced? Or do you think they should, you know, they buried on screen Chadwick Boseman's version of that character. So do you think that that character should stay buried, or should they pull a multiverse kind of thing and bring somebody else in to play that character?
Well, we're fast approaching a movie based on Secret Wars, which is, you know, entirely about universes being torn apart and rebuilt and timelines shifting. I have a gut feeling that it's not recasting T'Challa. They're looking for an actor to play a grown-up version of of T'Challa's son, T'Challa, who, due to all types of, you know, world-altering shenanigans, can now be an adult alongside the rest of the Marvel heroes. I don't think they're going to literally bury Chadwick Boseman's character on screen and then create a new character named T'Challa and then recast T'Challa. This has to be the grown-up version of T'Challa Jr., for lack of a better phrase here.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't publish this, and I'm also going to run vaguely around it, but I remember hearing several months ago through the grapevine that they were looking to cast T'Challa's son as a grown-up actor, and they're looking at actors for it. So that was the first thing I thought of when I saw this report. I think that this is true. They are looking for an actor. They're looking for the new Black Panther, especially since Letitia Wright didn't exactly light the world on fire with Black Panther 2. But I don't think this is our T'Challa. I think this is a new T'Challa. It's T'Challa II. And I think that's the way we should be looking at this and reporting it. But that's just me.
So right before we go, I just want to ask you about that, like the Secret Wars idea, the idea that, you know, we're heading into a world where there's potentially going to be a gigantic reset button that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to be able to push. Do you think when they ultimately push that button, you were going to be interested, or is that going to be like an out point for you where you're just basically, aside from work stuff, just going to be like, all right, I had my time with Marvel, but now that, you know, they've essentially restarted by recasting all of these characters and whatever, and like found this story way to do it, but potentially is going to be setting up another 20 years of these type of stories. Are you still going to be interested in that universe when that happens?
Oh boy, that's the question, isn't it? I was such a Marvel super fan from 2008 to 2019, and some of it lingered throughout the early Disney Plus years. Like, I still like WandaVision, and I still like Loki. But man, Marvel started to feel like such an obligation over the past 5 years. It went from being something that I was actively excited about to something where I had a real hard time being bothered by a lot of it. And if they are going to hit a reset button, if they are going to, you know, be setting up the next decade of stories, they've got to really do something special, because just bringing back a bunch of X-Men characters saying, hey, look, Hugh Jackman's back one more time, that's not going to do it for me at this point. I need to be told that the future is exciting, as opposed to, hey, here's something from the past you liked. And I'm really worried that the next couple years of Marvel is going to be very desperate attempts to dig up characters and imagery that I liked 10 years ago.
Yeah, my optimistic look is that they're going to do exactly what you just said in order to lead to the reset thing. And then they're going to move on, you know, fully from that point and not really bring people back and all that kind of stuff. And they're just like basically squeezing as much juice out of the past 20 years as they can while they can before they sort of draw a line in the sand and say, all right, from this point on, these actors are playing these characters and whatever, and there's not going to be the sort of multiversal shenanigans and hey, remember this kind of nudging and winking that we've seen pop up over the past few years. But that's my optimistic take. We'll see how that actually pans out. You know, whatever they can do to make as much money as possible is what they're going to do. So I think a lot of it comes down to casting. You know, like, can they get the next exciting generation of actors to sign up for this stuff in the same way that, you know, you had Sebastian Stan signing up for a 9-movie contract way back in the day. You know, like, are they going to be able to sort of control their own destiny in that way? I don't know. There's a lot of open questions there, but we'll see. We'll be here talking about it. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on the show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.